Yes, I'll ask you the obvious question. What were your takeaways from what Mitch had to say yesterday?
Hey, good morning, Scotty and Steve. Always a pleasure coming on. Yeah, just listening to you guys right before I stepped on here, and yeah, I kind of agree. There was nothing shocking, and yet there was no way that, you know, the outlets were going to ignore Mitch Marner's availability last night or even ask him the obvious question, even though we kind of assumed that there was going to be sort of a non-answer. He obviously wants to be there for day one of training camp. I think the William Nylander situation is a fresh one still, both for management and the player. From the player side, there's no way that Mitch Marner wants to have the season that Nylander had. And part of the reason why William Nylander had the season he had was because, you know, he's sitting on the shelf for 2 months. And as good of a player as Nylander is or as Marner is, you know, 2 months is 2 months. And, you know, it's hard to get up to speed. I was talking with Austin Matthews about this with an availability in the summer, and he was even saying, he's like, you know, missing a week or two from an injury is one thing, especially when it's in the middle of the year, because you're already up to speed and then the injury happens and it's just a matter of getting back to that speed that you know. But when you miss the first 2 months of the year, getting up to that speed is a different story because everyone is sort of ramping up into midseason form and you're just getting your legs. So, you know, from Marner's perspective, there's a ton of motivation to get into the lineup for the first game of the season. And I think for management's sake, you know, this isn't as deep of a team as it was a year ago. You can make that argument. So to not have Mitch Marner causes a whole host of lineup problems as to who's going to be playing with Tavares, who shifts where in the lineup. And I don't think with how competitive that division is going to be with Florida coming on, with Buffalo coming on, I don't think there is really kind of any freebie games that you can go into the season and say, okay, we're not going to have Marner in addition to not having the number of defensemen who are actually nursing injuries. So, yeah, the Leafs better get this done, and they better get it done before training camp opens.
I took high school science, so I know this. Humans are mostly water, and water is made of molecules. Did any one of those molecules in your body watching that interview feel bad for Mitch Marner? Because it's difficult to illustrate on the radio, but when he was being asked those questions about his contract, it looked like he hated existence itself.
Yeah, you know, I feel a lot for Mitch Marner in the sense that he's always been sort of the overlooked superstar on this hockey team. And, you know, it's not his fault that he's on a team that includes Austin Matthews, William Nylander, and now John Tavares. Like, put Mitch Marner in any other team situation, and his contract is your number one priority going back a year. But as it stands, you know, he's always sort of played second fiddle to Austin Matthews and to a degree even William Nylander. He got shut out of his bonus structures as an entry-level contract. And even going into these negotiations, like I talked to a lot of people, even just like friends and family, and it just seems like Marner doesn't get the same sort of respect even today that you'd expect out of a guy who has led this team in scoring in back-to-back years, has played on the penalty kill and been everything in that role for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, first two games of this playoff series against Boston Bruins was easily, I think, Toronto's best player. And, you know, they're still going down in these negotiations saying, oh, he's not even close to being the player that Austin Matthews is. And that's where I kind of feel sorry for the guy. I think that this contract should have been done a long time ago. And the fact that the Leafs are sort of, I don't want to say nickel and diming, but still kind of sweating over the dollars and cents. I know they're in a cap situation. That's not Marner's fault. And that's sort of where I feel sorry for him. Not the fact that he's got to answer questions, but the fact that it just seems like the Leafs are motivated to sign him and yet aren't motivated to give him the number that I think he's probably deserving of.
With Michael Trakos, national hockey writer for Post Media at Sportsnet Today, Scott MacArthur, Steve Dangle, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So, look, offer sheets are things, they don't often get used, and I don't even know if there's a point to going down this road, because one would think if there was an offer sheet, it would have been out there by now, but then again, who knows? The offer sheet for the player, the restricted free agent, Michael, is both empowering and saps you of your power at the same time. It is empowering in that if you sign it, you have guaranteed term and dollar for whatever the length of that contract. You're immediately stripped of your power if you're hoping that your team retains you. Because if a decision gets made where the Maple Leafs were to look at it and say, yeah, we'll take the picks, then Mitch Marner could end up with his term and his dollar, his empowerment, but he may end up playing somewhere where he would rather not be because he went after that. And so there's got to be, I would think, some push and pull internally with a guy like Mitch and in his camp, because you want to max out, but at the very same time, I think deep down we believe Mitch wants to be a Maple Leaf.
Oh, 100%. Like, we're not talking about a kid who grew up in another country or another city even. This guy is a GTA kid, definitely wants to play for the Leafs and win a cup for the Leafs. And I think it would eat him inside if he did sign that offer sheet. And, you know, 2 years down the road, Toronto Maple Leafs are hoisting a cup and he's making his millions, but still chasing his championship dreams elsewhere. This is a scenario where I think the Leafs know that Mitch Marner wants to be here. And I think that's probably maybe hurting negotiations as much as anything. At the same time, I don't know. Do we believe that there's an offer sheet on the table for him? I don't believe there is. And even if there was one, I don't believe that Mitch is signing it. I'm sorry, though?
Do you think there could be? There may not be one right now. Do you think that there could be over the next, 4-6 weeks?
No, I think if one was going to happen, we would have already seen it by now.
Right.
I think teams are, you know, they want to know what the rest of the summer looks like. They want to know what the lineup's going to look like in July 1st. If that move was going to happen, it would have been at the same time as Mark Bergevin's offer sheet to Sebastian Aho. So, yeah, I'm not confident that there's one coming in the near future. There might have, that's the thing, we don't know every year how many offer sheets were presented to players that they just never signed. Those don't get reported on. And it wouldn't shock me if the Islanders did, you know, tender an offer sheet and we just didn't hear about it because it's Luke Lamoriello and he keeps things real close to the vest. And Kyle Dubas seems to be cut of the same ilk in that regard. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if there was an offer sheet, but I would be surprised if Mitch actually signed one.
Some of the heat I saw yesterday was, you know, Mitch kept going, well, my agent, I'm going to let my agent handle that, my agent. And some of the blowback that I saw was, well, it's ultimately your decision. So this is your fault or whatever. But I want to defend Mitch there because it seems like his agent was gearing up for this from day one, wasn't he? Like, what were your feelings when Austin Matthews signs his contract, the Leafs have their franchise center for the next half decade, and the same day his agent basically launches attack against that player and the team? Like, this was always going to happen into the summer, wasn't it?
I think so. I don't know if it was an attack, though, Steve. Like,
I was pretty pointed.
I think he called it a terrible deal. Well, you know what? I think there's always going to be posturing. I think it still goes back to, like, in an ideal world, the natural order of things was to sign Nylander, Marner, and then Matthews, and each guy would get successively more money. That didn't happen. Like, the Leafs skipped a step by going Nylander to Matthews, and I think that sort of, you know, it kind of disrupted things in a large way, because now Marner's just looking at the Matthews contract going, I'm every bit as good of a player as Matthews. I don't play the same position, but you know, in today's NHL, where you've got Kucherov, Patrick Kane, and a number of wingers like Johnny Gaudreau driving the play, as Mike Babcock likes to say, being a center means, you know, not as much maybe as it did 10 or 15 years ago. So now Marner's looking at that Austin Matthews contract saying, okay, well, I should be at least at that same number or slightly below it. Whereas had they got Marner done before Matthews, well, that's a moot point. So I still question why this deal wasn't done a year ago, why it wasn't done. I know the agent didn't want to talk during the season, but you know what? Agents always say that. And then you present them with a contract like Leafs presented Matthews, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, we decided just to get it done. I don't know why that wasn't done in this scenario. And I think the Leafs are really paying the price for it. And you know, to lobby blame at Marner or his agent because of where this is headed. Well, the Leafs are just as culpable in my mind.
Totally. It takes two to tango for sure. But this was always the plan, man. It reeks of it. It always reeked of it, from the Matthews comments to every other guy that this agent has represented. This is the game. The only thing that's different about most cases with this agent is it would be ridiculous to threaten to send Mitch Marner to the KHL. This, in my mind, with this guy, it was always, always going to happen.
But when you say it's always going to happen, you don't think the agent wants to negotiate a fair deal? And, you know, when I say fair, I guess there's an interpretation of that. But I don't think that the agent's in the business of wanting this to drag on. I think he wants a deal done. It's just a matter of the Leafs number and Marner's camp's number is so far off that, you know, you're left with very limited options in terms of negotiating power when you're an RFA. Basically, you can do what William Nylander did and just not play until a fair contract is presented, or you can hope that a team offers you to you. And, you know, I know that there's posturing in the public with what Darren Ferris has said and what Marner's camp has said outright, but, you know, I think that's par for the course. Like, if he was a UFA, obviously you wouldn't get this. But right now, Mitch Marner doesn't have a contract, and the Leafs haven't come to him with a number that seems fair based on what he's produced in the last 2 to 3 years and what he's going to produce. And I think there's no doubt as to what kind of player he is. I think that's the difficult situation in my mind, is that we were guessing as to what William Nylander's potential is, and we're still guessing at what it is. With Marner, basically look at what he did this year and what he did in parts of last season when he's playing on the fourth line and with whoever else he's been kind of lumped in with. And you can say that this guy's a superstar in the making if he's not already that. There's no guesswork here. It's the same thing with Austin Matthews. And it's just a matter of, can the Leafs afford to keep him, and can they afford to give him that cap hit that he's probably deserving of? And that's a difficult situation, because, you know, if the Leafs weren't pushed up against the cap, I think this deal gets done a lot sooner than it's getting done.
With Michael Tracos, national hockey writer of Post Media. So I suppose, Michael, that there is something to the notion of rising tides float all ships, or I might have totally just butchered that, but I think you understand what I'm saying. My complaint about this league is that post 12-13 lockout, this CBA, the loopholes got closed that gave good teams with a lot of good players the advantage. And what I mean by that is, if you go back and look at the Stanley Cup winners in Chicago, Los Angeles, these teams had backsliding long, long-term deals that helped to mitigate annual average value. Los Angeles, I don't know if they signed any of their own, but they acquired Richards and Carter, who had signed their deals with Philadelphia. Even the Vancouver Canucks, who didn't win the Stanley Cup, had one with Roberto Luongo. The Blackhawks had Duncan Keith and still do. They had Marian Hossa, etc. Teams like Toronto that draft and develop well post the last lockout cannot do that to mitigate AAV with their players. Yet, they function in the same league as a team up until recently, like the Arizona Coyotes, who used to acquire Pavel Datsyuk and Marian Hossa, and before that, Chris Pronger. Not so that they could pay them real money, but so that they could get to the cap floor. Like, the Toronto Maple Leafs have not won a playoff series in this Chanaplan era, and they are already up against the salary cap. And we haven't even started to talk about next summer, where they're going to have to put together a defense corps.
From scratch, pretty much.
Like, what is happening? Yeah. You have got to allow teams.
I said it for the last 2 years, though. Like, this team's window was 2 years ago, and it was as wide open as it's ever going to be this past season. And you had to win, I think, or at least go deep when Mitch, Austin, and William were still on their entry-level contracts, or at least two of the three were on entry-level contracts. It becomes harder and harder now, and you're right. They've got championship problems without ever having reached the second round with this core, and that's a difficult one, and it's the same problem that Edmonton has to a degree.
Or Winnipeg.
In Winnipeg, yeah, you definitely need to make hay while your guys are on entry-level deals. You need some guys who are grossly underpaid, one or two players that are probably overpaid, and then a middle group that is probably making what they should be. And right now, Toronto doesn't have those guys that are grossly underpaid.
But Michael,
they might if they get some young guys, but it's going to be difficult. I think I get what you're saying, Scott.
Isn't there something functionally wrong with a league that punishes competency?
I don't know if I'd say that. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, had the Leafs not drafted so well, then they're not in this position. Like, if they don't draft a Mitch Marner, instead they had maybe a Dylan Strome, they're in less of a problem. But would you rather have Dylan Strome or Mitch Marner at this situation? I get what you're saying. They drafted and developed properly, and now we're at the point where they have to pay their players, and then you're having to break up a roster. You know, that's a salary cap world, and the smart teams and the good teams here, the ones that are able to compete year in and year out, find ways to find cheap options to put in their lineup. But, you know, ultimately, you're going to have to pay for your superstars. And Pittsburgh's done it for years where, you know, you locate your three to four guys that you believe are your core players and you pay them a ton of money. And then you let some guys just go by the wayside, whether it's, I don't want to say Nazem Kadri's gone by the wayside, but those third liners, those second line wingers, those second pair defensemen, those are the guys that are maybe more interchangeable in today's NHL. And, you know, this is why Kyle Dubas's his hard work wasn't luring John Tavares to Toronto. It's making sure that this group that, is built around, three to four superstars can stay competitive and can win the championship while you're kind of mixing in and out the secondary players. And I think every team goes through that. And if you don't like it, then, that's something that the league has to really change at the next CBA. But talking to GMs, talking to owners at the GM meetings and the Board of Governors, it doesn't seem like there's an appetite for changing how things are structured. Obviously, the rich teams would love to have no cap situation and be able to retain all their players and pay them whatever they want to pay them, but that's not how the NHL works in Gary Bettman's world.
All right, Michael. Well, just promise you'll come visit and feed me my prunes and carrot soup as I mutter to myself about how the Toronto Maple Leafs are the true victims once I've lost it within the next couple of years.
Yeah, you're going to get a lot of support for that.
Yes, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Go down to Vancouver and have that argument on the street.
Yeah, is this airing out west?
Put that on a T-shirt and wear it in downtown Edmonton in late July. That would go over well. Thanks, my friend. It's always great.
Poor Leafs.
Poor Leafs.
Thanks, guys.
Yes.